That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Lepondre looking to get Constantine to Font. Lepondre away from David. 3-1 running. 3 points running.
Hello and welcome to the Empire Roles review of the season. Well, it has been, I don't know, how do I sum this? Tumultuous season, hasn't it? 150th anniversary. 25 defeats out of a possible 46 games. 87 goals conceded, but we stayed up. That is all that matters. And I have been joined by two Reading fans. One of them was an ex-player. And his name is Simon Cox. Hi, Simon. How you doing?
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a weird one, hasn't it, Simon?
I think you've put that pretty lightly. Listen, it probably wasn't the 150th anniversary that most Reading fans dreamed of. But the end goal was to stay in the division. And that was achieved, which is a bonus. And now it's a big rebuild.
A massive rebuild. And I've also been joined by Matt Lindsay. How are you doing, Matt?
Oh, all good. Yeah, the season's over. To be honest, though, you say it's been a tumultuous season. We've had some of the worst games we've probably seen as Reading fans, but there has been some absolute crackers in there as well, which I'm sure we'll touch upon. So it's not going to be all doom and gloom.
There has been some crackers, most of them right towards the end, though, weren't they, Matt, to be honest?
Yeah. I think we just need to skate over January, February and, yeah, everything that came before.
Yeah, August wasn't great as well. But, yeah, apart from that, it's all absolutely fantastic. So, Simon, going into a season, you must always be thinking about, you know, how the season's going to go. And we were talking about this before we started recording, about all players must be feeling, you know, we've always got a chance, despite all the odds against you. But as Reading went into last season as it is now, they must have known really it was going to be a difficult one with Panovic in charge at that point.
Yeah, but I think when you look at it, when you sort of sit down a pre-season and you've got the likes of Liam Moore in your team at the start, you've got Lucas Zhao, you've got John Swift in your team. I think you sort of look at that and think that's not a bad spine then. And if they can stay fit and you know, score at one end and obviously Swift score and assist and Liam Moore help with keeping clean sheets. And all of a sudden you sort of be a little bit optimistic, but it wasn't the sort of season as we all sort of dreamed of. But I think, at the start of the season, it was quite optimistic, just purely and simply on when you look around the dressing room, you sort of thought, yeah, do you know what? I fancy the lads to do all right this season, you know, whether they would have gone on to do playoff push or anything else like that. But I didn't envisage the way it turned out. I know that.
No, it just dipped off dramatically as we get into a little bit later on. But Matt, we start the season with a 3-2 defeat at Stoke City. Don't worry if you're listening to this. We're not going to go through game by game because that would be horrendous. I don't want to put anyone through that. Just to like pinpoint the start of the season, it was a decent match, wasn't it? I know we lost. That seems to always happen at Stoke City, but you were there.
Yeah, and I mean, it was first game back for fans as well. I remember going back and I was buzzing. I was a little bit apprehensive because obviously I'd been affected a bit by COVID over the 2 years, you know. But I was apprehensive, you know. You were looking at it and you were thinking like, well, return to normality, you know, and that normality of going and seeing Reading lose on a weekend. But like it was so nice, and it was a belter of a game, you know. And I think you always thought Stoke was always going to be a hard game to kick off the season. You know, Stoke away never do well there, like you say. I can't even remember the last time we beat them, to be fair. They're seemingly a big bogey team of Reading, but yeah, cracking game, just didn't come out on the right side of it. And I think the defense really set the scene for the season, didn't they, that game, conceding three.
Yes, yeah, totally. I mean, John Swift had a brilliant game in that first game, though, didn't he? And that really, like, showed what he was going to do this season, because there's no doubt in his ability ever, is there, Simon? I mean, he's one of the best midfielders in the Championship.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, he's had a really good season. Loads of goals, loads of assists, chances created. You know, most influential player, I think, pretty much in the Championship in terms of assists and chances created. So, you know, that says a lot about how good a season he was having, especially it's probably highlighted in a team that was struggling. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he kicked off with a really good performance against Stoke was, you know, probably set his standards up for the season.
Yeah, he's almost taken on a leader's role, which wasn't necessarily something that I'd associate with John Swift, but his performance was actually pushing the team along.
Yeah, I think more so it was... I don't know him at all, but I wouldn't sort of envisage him being a shouter and a baller at people. I would see him more leading through performance levels and dragging the team up the pitch, ball carrying, creating chances, assists, that sort of thing, scoring goals. So that's more of what I would sort of have called how he is a leader, really.
Yeah, totally. We do go on to get our first win of the season against Preston quite early on, a 2-1 win. That was a relief, wasn't it, Matt? Because if you go on too long throughout the season and you don't pick up a win, I mean, that's going to be hellish, isn't it?
It was. And even though it was exciting, the start of the season, we started, obviously, as well. We knew the squad situation as well. We knew kind of the embargo that we were still under. You know, we didn't know if we'd be able to sign anyone, you know, in the summer, you know, and to bounce back from the Stoke with a win against Preston, it was almost, well, you talk about crucial wins in a season. I guess it didn't turn out to be that crucial in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, you never want to, as I guess Simon also knows, you know, you never want to go long in a season without a win. You need to get that first step, you know, because then you can start building. You can look at the games in front of you then. And but yeah, it's a big win. We could see the problems that were amounting, though, at that stage, because the squad just was so thin at that point.
Yeah, you don't want to go too far into the season without winning a game of football. Because then you start, if it takes you a long time, all of a sudden your belief starts running, like leaving your squad, and start wondering how and when are we going to win a game of football. But after two games, one win, one defeat, not the worst start in the world.
No, it's not a disaster. We lose a few more in August. It wasn't a great one, but we do have the transfer window shutting at that point at the end of August. We're bringing some players, which kind of the players that we've brought in over the last few years. We bring in a Danny Drinkwater. We bring in Baba and Roman. Two of those players definitely were key in us staying up, I would say, Matt. Definitely Baba and Roman. Danny Drinkwater, let's be fair, has split opinions. Let's not dice around on that one.
Yeah, he split opinions. I mean, he showed us right at the start what he was capable of, you know, the Fulham game. But then just the inconsistencies, you know, from him, I guess, you know, we'd all been warned by Villa fans and Burnley fans what he was like kind of off the pitch. More Villa fans are kind of what he was like on the pitch, because they saw more than someone like Burnley. But yeah, you know, at the time, I remember looking at it and kind of just thinking, though, when he signed, because we were still under, well, we were under, what wasn't embargo, was it? We just could only spend $8.5K on wages.
Yes.
You look at the two that you got, because that was, again, very late in the window. It was after the Huddersfield game, because, again, the Huddersfield game, we lost 4-0. And you think, how are we going to start winning games from this? Because we've won, I think, we'd lost three on the bounce or something, you know, and no players in. Paunovic was, you know, asking questions and coming out with obviously some weird statements in the media, and you're just thinking, where are we going to sign people from? But then you get people like Drinkwater and Rahman. You think, can we do much better than that on $8,500 a week? You know, so I'd say it gave me a boost at the time.
Scott Dan was a good signing, though.
Yeah,
he was.
Was a good signing. Good, one of those sort of shrewd signings that probably no one saw coming, but needed a experienced head at centre half to try and pull people around and make the defence a little bit more solid if he possibly could. And I thought that was a really good signing.
Yeah, totally. And he's going to be here next year. So hopefully that will be good for us, because he's been a little bit injury prone, but I think his leadership we will need massively next season. We're still borrowing Tom Dele-Bashiru, who towards the end of the season, he was really being played out of position. So he wasn't giving his full potential. We found it really hard. But when he was playing actually as an attacking midfielder, Matt, I thought he was pretty decent. I thought he was a good loan signing.
I think when he came in from Watford, obviously he had all the Watford fans raving about him. We saw, again, it was a bit of a weird signing because I think he hadn't played for a year because he did his ACL. I think it was his ACL, and he actually did it at Reading the previous season in his debut, I think, for Watford. It was a strange turn of events, very strange turn of events. But yeah, like they were saying about how he was obviously in the under 23s before that. And we saw that early in the season, didn't we? You know, so some of his performances and that when he was, like, say, playing in a more advanced position. I know he then kind of did a bit more out on the wing when he'd come on later in the season. But you can see there's a player in there. He's not a holding midfielder. He gets bullied, you know, when he's been, you know, had to play alongside Drinkwater or Laurent, whoever he was playing deep. But, you know, again, it was another kind of signing which you looked at and you thought, you know, we're getting some quality. And to be honest, could we have done much better with the restrictions we had early in the season? That's, you know, some people might say, well, yeah, we could have, because, you know, ultimately we finished 21st. But you look at the transfer window and you, with the restrictions, you'd probably say it was a relatively good window, I'd be hesitant to say.
Yeah, not too bad. If you look at September, though, how it kind of like starts, we had the draw against QPR, 3-0. We then beat Peterborough. We then went to Fulham and we won. We then got a win against Middlesbrough. That was such a massive run for us picking up those points, Simon, because if we didn't have them, we would have been in huge trouble.
Yeah, listen, I think obviously the Fulham game sticks out because they go on to be champions, but Reading have always done okay at Fulham. It's a bit of a mad one that you tend to go there, take a really big following. It's only up the M4, so it's nice. But you can't go to places like Derby and get beat as well. So that's a big issue. But you take, what was it, the Middlesbrough game, the Fulham game, the Peterborough game, and then the draw at QPR as well. You take those points into an accumulation of the season, and then it ends up being a really big, big September.
Yeah, totally. And what I take out of that is Ovie Ejaria's performance against Fulham. Those two goals were just absolutely...
But I think
they were so good.
it just shows, though, that's the sort of level that he can get to, you know, and barring injuries and a little bit of loss of form and everything else, you sort of look at, again, going back to the start of the season, you're looking at people like him and you're thinking, obviously lost Michael Olise to go to Palace and everything else. And you think, right, can you then step into his shoes and be that focal point with John Swift, who are going to then create things for us, be the people that take us up the pitch, be the people who can get people excited about coming to watch the games. And like I say, barring injuries and loss of form and stuff, he never really lived up to that expectation after that game.
Yeah, he never did he, Matt? I'm not quite sure what it is about Ovie. I mean, it's a well-known fact that I'm a massive fan of his. Every fan has a blind spot for one player. And he's that player for me. But I still swear there's something in there that can come out. And if you play him maybe as a 10, I think there's more potential. But I'm sure there'll be lots of people listening to this thinking, Paul, just let it go. Let it go.
Yeah. No, well, like I said, everyone has that, don't they? You know, I think we've all had our favourites in the past. You know, I think, you know, won't go into him, but Puskás was mine early doors. You know, I was on here defending him quite a lot on here and, you know, the effort and what have you.
I'm disappointed by him.
Yeah, really? I think everyone... I think everyone's been disappointed by him, you know, with the money he came in from, you know, and the hype around him. He's just never hit the ground. Well, he had an okay first season, didn't he? But it was just, he never followed on, you know, and again, the first half of...
No. Yeah, I just think that, like, he went off and he went to his other spot. I can't remember where he went. Somewhere in Italy. Was it somewhere?
Yeah, he's at Pisa now.
And he's gone and scored loads of... I think he just got player of the month for them. So, like, the fact that there is a player in there, I just sort of thought, well, how... I understand that some players, they fit at certain clubs and some don't, which is, you know, acceptable. But, yeah, I was quite disappointed with him. I thought he came with a big reputation and I thought that this would be a really good sort of place for him to play his football, and it just didn't work out for him.
Yeah, I do wonder, because there was a situation when he wasn't allowed to go to the Olympics with Romania. Right. And I have no inside information on this at all.
I just wonder
what dynamic was going on there after that, because he'll never get that chance again, probably.
No. And I think it's probably the fact that, like, was he, like, Reading's main source of goals at that time as well? So if you
could have been our only fit striker, so it was a major issue there. But then he didn't play, because then we got... It's very complicated, but yes.
Yeah,
football politics, Simon.
I know them all too well.
It is very, very complex. But I just think that at some point, hopefully next season, we'll see Ovie Ejaria, if he's still here. Who knows?
We all know there's a player there.
Nothing is impossible in the world of football, is it, Matt? What do you think? Do you think he'll still be here or gone?
I think most players that are still in contract will probably still be here, because I think, let's be honest, I don't think we can really, well, with the amount of players that are out of contract. I had the discussion with Alex on the way back from Luton at the weekend, because you look at, you know, you've got 10 odd players, or including academy, well, no, I think is it 11 including academy players that are still in contract. You know, if you start losing some of those players that are still in contract, you're needing to replace them with 14, 15 players just to make up your squad. And you think, like, how much are Reading actually going to be able to do in rebuilding on that side? I know it might only be a player or two that you look to sell, but I think he'll be here. I think he'll be here next year. You know, we all know there's a player in there, though. You know, we've all seen what he can do. He needs the consistency. You know, I guess that's probably what, because everyone was comparing him to Eze not too long ago, weren't they? You know, saying, it's this great battle between Ovie and Eze. Who's going to be better? They're very similar players and all that. Malarkey, but you know,
I think we had a player who was better than him, but he's now with him at Palace.
Oh, of course, yeah.
At least
he's undoubtedly
on another level, I feel.
Yeah,
he's just what are your thoughts on Michael Elise? I mean, you've probably watched him on Sky and stuff, and
top talent. I think he'll outgrow Palace very, very quickly. In all honesty, I think Arsenal were in for him as well, so that wouldn't be a bad move. I think he's a top, top talent. I think he's going to go on to do some really good things.
Yeah, I can't see anything else from that. He seems to have, not only does he have the ability, he has the drive, which I think is a huge factor, isn't it? Because you can have players who don't have the ability, but they don't quite maximise it. But he just wants to get bigger and bigger.
I think he got a bit of a wake-up call from Patrick Vieira when he first went into Palace as well. I think he basically turned around to him and said, like, it's not all about you, it's about the team. And you have to do the work as well as be the flair player and be the quality that we've brought you in. And then I think when he sort of realised that you either listen to him or you get out, and he then went on and done some really, really good things. So, he's a top talent. So he's going to go on to do some really good things.
If you're not listening to Patrick Vieira, there's something wrong there, isn't there?
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Mike knows what he's talking about, to be fair, doesn't he? You know? So we go into October. We start there with another two huge wins. Cardiff City, which also saw the goal from Junior Hoyler. I think he was a good signing for us as well, Simon. He's a very experienced player with maybe a point to prove, because he'd been in Cardiff for quite a while. You know, these players want to prove that they're still good enough at that level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another experienced head as well, because as we sort of saw that the team was actually getting a little bit younger. So bringing in some experience was going to help. Somebody who's done it at Championship level, Premier League level as well, won the Championship as well. I think he won it with QPR. So actually was a pretty shrewd signing. There's always questions, I think, around Junior Hoilett, where can he do it enough for a certain period of time, for a sustained period of time, but actually showed that in a lot of games, there were the times he did turn up, he was actually a pretty decent signing.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, no, again, for the money we were able to get him in on, again, like the proven quality that's there, you know, I guess he did have quiet spells, you know, in the team and difficult spells in the team, but everyone did this season, you know, and if there's a few players you're looking to sign next year, if you're looking to re-sign, you know, 4 or 5 players next year, you're probably thinking about potentially him as well, because again, he's a natural winger, which at Reading we've been starved of for so long. You know, really, I think the only one before that was Mo Barrow, really, the last, it depends if you count Mate as a winger as well, but you know, the only real out and out winger before him was Barrow. So
that's,
yeah, you know,
now, isn't it? Yeah,
it seems an eternity. It seems an absolute eternity.
He was quick. Now coming up to one of the key matches, I think, of the season, Blackpool at home. We're winning 2-0 at home. We then managed to lose convincingly 3-2. And all the way through the game, I was thinking, I don't know how we ever managed to get to 2-0 up here, because Blackpool were magnificent that night, Matt. I mean, for me, that kind of sucked a lot of energy out of the team.
It did. And to be fair, when we were 2-0 up, I think we were in the playoffs at that time. I think after the Cardiff game, we talked about bonkers games of the season. That Cardiff game was probably one of the most bonkers games I think any Reading fan seen. Pretty much one shot all game to Cardiff's 27. You know, we were sitting seventh at that point going into Blackpool, and you think, we're in the playoffs now, beating Blackpool. You know, Blackpool, they'd had a relatively decent start. People were talking about them being dark horses. You know, they failed towards the end of the season, but how it capitulated then just wrote the story for the rest of the season, holding on to leads, throwing them away, or getting a lead, throwing them away, you know, and in quite incredible fashion. I mean, we like I say, we were properly beaten, because I think, again, in that game, we only had about four shots in the entire game. And, you know, we scored from two of them. I think Deli Bashiru got another one, didn't he, that night? I think, yes. Did he get two? Yeah, I can't quite remember, but yeah, you know, it was almost very similar to Cardiff, apart from the fact that, you know, Cardiff never got their goal and Blackpool were able to get three that night, you know, in that second half. And it just put almost just like a taste in your mouth, because you'd already seen Coventry away, threw away a lead and threw away one point in the 97th minute. QPR at home, 3-1 up, thrown away a lead, and you've done it again against Blackpool at home, and you're starting to think, we're 2 months into the season and we're seeing a theme here.
Totally. We then proceed to lose another 3 games on the trot, and the pressure is building on Panovic now. We're starting to drop off. We're seeing bad habits that kind of we saw in the previous season, despite finishing seventh. We consistently sat back against teams, Simon. I don't know if you've played in teams like that, where they take the lead, they just want to hold on. The season before, we had players like Elise, Omar Richards, who've obviously gone on to much better things, that got us out of those games. But we didn't have those, and we were paying the price every single week. Yeah, it felt like, as a fan, how's it like playing in a team like that just wants to sit back quite a lot?
Well, I think if you've got something to hold on to, then it's not too bad. But as Matt was saying, though, there were games where Reading had taken the lead and sat back and weren't able to hold on to the results. But what you tend to find is, if you're only having 2 or 3 shots in games and you're scoring 1 or 2 goals, which is great from a perspective as a football club, but actually you need to know that the back door is shut as well. And when your defence is leaking goals, 3 goals. I mean, it was a 83rd minute pen against Blackpool. So it was one of those where you're looking at it going, why do we keep getting deeper and deeper into games and somehow we keep conceding goals? Then it starts to be an internal thing. People start to think about, you know, are the lads fit enough? Are they concentrating enough? Are we working too hard in training? Are the lads too tired? I would imagine there would have been a big inquest in terms of the staff and how they would have gone about trying to fix that.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I mean, for me, I could see the beginning of the end coming quite early on. I was hoping it'd turn it round because you don't want another new manager at Reading. So I mean, we've had so many in the last few years. It's just a continuous kind of like rotation of who's it going to be for this 6 months.
Yeah, keep changing managers and it starts to become a little bit of a theme. Listen, nobody wants to lose their job. Absolutely nobody wants to do that. But the game that we're in terms of football, it's a results-based business. And if you can see, as you put it, the nearing of the end, it becomes very, very hard to stay in your job, especially when you've probably got supporters not being too kind to the manager as well. And that then all of a sudden accelerates the process probably. And the owners then start to look at who can we possibly get in. And what you normally sort of find when you replace a manager, you normally get that little bit of a bounce, whether that just be in performance level, whether that be results as well. Because it's a new voice, it's a different voice, it's different tactics and all of that sort of stuff. But because he lost his job, and it then looks like it's a bit of a farcical situation to continue at Reading with the likes of keep changing the manager.
Yes. One little bit of fun that we did have during the season, I don't know if you describe it as fun or not, was the signing of Andy Carroll. Because just such a random situation to have him at Reading, and we had I wouldn't say a great win. It felt like a great win because we never beat Swansea. Just beating Swansea was just so nice. On its own, it means nothing. But going there and winning, Matt, 3-2, we had the celebration of rowing in the boat. All these things you just need, I think, as a fan. Yeah, I enjoyed it anyway.
I think any Reading fan hates the prospect of facing Swansea, because again, like you say, they're a team that we just never beat, and we always find some incredible way to lose to them. Ironically, the Birmingham game just before was the one away game I saw away this season that we won, and then I was going to go to Swansea, but then I had an onset of glandular fever then, so I couldn't go to Swansea.
You saw Jamari Clark score his two goals, though.
I did see Jamari Clark score his two goals. I did.
Jamari Clark could be a good player, though. We just don't know, do we? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's an odd one, how he phased out through the season. You know, like after that, and you know, you were thinking, like, because the two goals he scored were very good. You know, they were proper centre forwards goal. I think one was a cracking header. The other was great movement in the box. You know, they were proper strikers goals. And it's the first time we'd kind of seen Reading come back from behind, you know, because again, that's the thing that we've seen over the last few years, you know, and that Birmingham match, it was like, well, because again, run of four defeats, we go behind and then we come back late on in that game. It was very out of the blue, but the signing of Andy Carroll, like you say, it was such an odd one out of the blue. You never really expect to see a player like that play at Reading, and all the stories around why he was coming to Reading, you know, or not why he was coming to Reading, but the wages that he was on, you know, reported that, you know, he was literally almost playing for pretty much nothing, whether or not that's true or not, you know, only he would know that. But, well, I say nothing, not nothing to most people, but like in respect to him. But yeah, it's, you look at that kind of player, and then like you say, that game against Swansea, it was just fun. It was fun. Like, I mean, scoring early. What you did they? No, we scored first, didn't we? And then yes. They scored, equalised straight away. Then we scored again, and then they equalised straight away. It was a bonkers game.
Yeah, we got it 3-2 straight after. It was goal after goal, and it was a fantastic kind of like, one of those moments was actually enjoyable with Reading this season, Simon, because there hasn't been many at all. And to actually come out of it showing some fight was like, oh, hang on. Maybe we can turn this around under Paunovic.
Yeah, but it's a game that I think Paunovic would have actually enjoyed as well, because Swansea, well-renowned for playing good football, Paunovic obviously wanted to play good football as well. So it was actually sort of like you go, we go sort of thing. And hence the sort of two and throwing of the goals. So the fact that it was a footballing side versus what Paunovic wanted to be a footballing side, it would have actually been a good game. But the fact that big Andy Carroll pops up with a couple is a little bit different to what probably Reading fans have been used to in recent years.
And probably one of the best things as well was, I don't know if you ever saw the video after, Simon, but there was a video of a Swansea fan getting rather irate at Andy Carroll's goal and celebration. I watched it on repeat. It was a brilliant, brilliant moment to watch.
It's fantastic. He's just sat there in the stands and he goes, oh, is that fucking Andy Carroll again?
Yeah, he always scores against us.
Oh, dear. You know, we've all been there. You see it and you just think, you must have that as a player sometimes, Simon. You must think you're playing against someone and you know they're going to score against you. You just think, please don't do it today.
Yeah, you have it as a player. You have your favourite teams that you know, no matter what you do the night before or the time leading up to it, you know you have that feeling of, you know, I'm going to score today, or that person's going to score against us today, or, you know, whatever way it's going to be. So you do have those. And obviously Andy Carroll is one of his, is Swansea.
Yeah, no, I love these crazy videos. Just after that, we did pick up a 1-1 against Hull City, which was an error from Luke Southwood for the goal. But hopefully he'll come back next season. He'll come back stronger for all the situations he's been from, the experiences he's been through as well. We lose 1-0 at West Brom, but then we have the COVID outbreak and then we don't have a period of games. The COVID world must have been very strange for footballers, Simon, in the industry that you've been as well, because you've been at Billericay as well. How's that been? Because it's been for 2 years now.
Yeah, it's difficult because you have to follow protocol. You know, you have to make sure that people's health and family health and everything else takes priority over what is basically a kickabout. You know, as much as we all take it very, very seriously, health and welfare come way above everything else. So you have to take all of it into consideration. Having a break throughout the season in terms of not playing for 2-3 weeks or so can be very, very disruptive. Depends on how often you're able to train and how many people are able to train at that period of time. If you can get over any sort of tactical element, making sure the lads are still doing their fitness work and getting out and doing some sort of work, doing some running or some weights and stuff like that. Depends on where people live. Some people live in apartments, might not have that sort of availability to them. Some obviously live in houses, some, you know, you just don't know what people's situations are. So it can be very disruptive, but you have to take, like I say, welfare and health over everything.
Yeah, totally. Okay, this is a bit of a warning here. We're now going to approach January for Reading Football Club. This is one of the worst months you could possibly have experience as a Reading fan, player, owner. I don't know what your situation would be. It was absolutely horrific. I'm just going to string off the results here and then we can go into a group therapy situation. 2-2 with Derby, 2-0 up, well, I think 5 minutes to go. Kidderminster Harriers, okay, they're a little bit lower in the pyramid than us. You get surprises in the FA Cup, you're always going to get that. But they beat us 2-1 and they deserve to beat us. Then we suffered our worst ever home defeat in Football League history against Fulham, 7-0. Middlesbrough away. We lose in the last minute after winning for most of the game. Then we lose to Luton. Then we have our 150th anniversary match. We lose 4-3 against Huddersfield. And then we top it off with a 4-0 defeat against Queen's Park Rangers. Simon, it's been a classic, hasn't it?
To be honest, I actually, I don't know, for some mad reason, I didn't fancy Reading against Kidderminster either. I just thought it was one of those horrible, horrible results that you could see coming. The club in a bit of a bad place, results not going their way, going to a team and a club that the stadium's right on top of your fans, right on top of your atmosphere, a little bit hostile. If they can keep it to a sort of level playing field for a certain amount of time, and then all of a sudden you just never know what can happen. If that game was at Reading, I would expect Reading to win 9 times out of 10. The fact that it was there, I just sort of, I don't know, with everything that was going on with the manager and the way that this, the whole, the players were feeling, it just wasn't, it didn't look like a game I sort of fancied Reading to win.
You could feel it. It had all the kind of like cocktail, didn't it, of a possible upset. And what made it even weirder, though, Simon, is that we took the lead. Normally, yeah, in those scenarios, it's kind of like the team that's lower down the pyramid get a little bit of something to hold on to. But we did it even the better way for Reading FC. Let's make it even more of a worse defeat. It's kind of, I don't know how we've done it.
I just think that, like, even at 1-0, if you don't then go and follow it up with 2 and 3 straight away after, 1-0, again, similar thing. It's still, for Kidderminster, that's still quite level playing field for them. You know, they're not being disgraced by anybody. They're not, you know, not being bullied or overrun or anything else like that. All of a sudden, you let them sort of back into the game last sort of 10, 15 minutes, and then they score, and then all of a sudden the crowd is up, and then they go on and score really late on. So it just, yeah. I mean, like I say, if Reading had gone and scored the first one, then followed it up with 2 and 3, then all of a sudden you'd be sat there going, oh, it's a pretty comfortable day at the office. But because it went 1 and then that 1 never followed up with a second or a third, it then still gave Kidderminster a lot of hope.
Matt, you were at quite a few of these games. Which one of them was the most horrific for you to endure? Because they're unreal.
What a question. Well, I wasn't actually at Kidderminster, because again, Derby and Kidderminster, I was lucky with the COVID break, because I had glandular fever all of December and start of January. So I missed that, and I missed Kidderminster. And I thought, oh yeah, if there's a game to miss, it was Kidderminster. How wrong was I? I mean, I just, Borough away, that was just
worse
depressing.
Than the Fulham 7-0, though.
Fulham 7-0 was bad, but I mean, QPR away was bad as well. Because, like, I mean, I've never been, like, again, like, I guess we've talked about this before, but, you know, Kidderminster happened, you thought, well, Derby happened, you thought, that's bad. Kidderminster happened, you think, it can't get worse than Kidderminster. Fulham happens, you think, well, that's the worst of the worst. Borough then happens, you think, how are Reading going to top this? QPR happens, and you think, Jesus Christ, like, seriously? I mean, and I had that weird thing of not being at football for about a month, and I was like, I really want to go to games. And poor Alex, I was saying to him every week, like, let's go. Like, and yeah, I think I've driven him insane the last year, pulling him to away games. But
I think you have pushed him over the edge, actually, to be honest.
Poor Alex. He's got a bit of the blues at the moment, I think.
But I've got to say, is to kind of just look at those combination of fixtures. I remember at the beginning of January, Panarin said January's going to be really, really bad. And let's be honest, he was absolutely spot on. He was not lying to us, Simon, was he? As a manager, as a fan, that's all you can ask, isn't it? It's complete honesty.
Yeah, that is true, but you don't want him to be that honest.
If you're a player, though, in that situation, and your manager has come out, you know that you're in a bad situation at the start of a month, because, again, injuries were... we had an injury list beyond belief at that point. You know, we were literally... Laurent was playing at centre-back a lot of the time. You know, you had Tetek sometimes playing right-back, Bristow playing left-back. You know, if you're a player in that team and your manager's come out after the loss at Kidderminster saying that, that can't motivate you as a player, surely. Or what's it kind of like?
Well, no, it doesn't. But I think there's not a lot that he would have been able to say that would have been able to motivate you. That's got to come from... internal. That's you yourself looking yourself in the mirror, looking each other square in the face and saying, lads, that was not good. That we need to sort of get ourselves together. Then obviously you follow that up with a 7-0 slapping. And you know, it just he then, well, again, like I say, there must have been an inquest in the dressing room after the game. There has to have been. You can't lose 7-0 and expect people to walk home or walk back to their cars and go in their cars and go home and expect to think that they've done okay. That's just not possible. Then all of a sudden you think, oh, there's a bit of a reaction there in terms of the going 1-0 up at Borough. And then all of a sudden you think, oh God, you know, losing right at the end as well. So that's the Middlesbrough game actually probably saw the reaction that you were looking for, but
just not the end.
Not right at the end. You know, again, it's sort of going back to the early part of the season, holding on to that lead and then all of a sudden losing the leads again. So there was just that soft underbelly at the club running throughout the whole season. And that was the big issue for the football club, more so through January, where a lot of goals went in. And that was actually, it wasn't to the detriment of the football club, funnily enough.
Yeah, which is absolutely crazy, isn't it? How we managed to get away with such an absolutely horrific period. I mean, one thing I will say for Panovic during that time is we had so many players out, which Matt mentioned. We had also had Bamaraman at the AFCON. We had Andy Yedem there as well. We were playing the academy, a lot of academy players in that Fulham game. So I felt sorry for those players because they were thrown into it. They were playing at a level that they shouldn't really have been kind of experiencing. And Fulham, as they've shown, will bang 7 goals past teams. We were not the only team that suffered that this season.
No, I remember being put in, not in that situation, but we had the FA Cup semi-final coming up and we end up going to Watford. Steve Clark, he put a very much a second string side out and it was basically, see how you get on, lads. You know, still some senior players in there, players who played a lot of games of football, but lads also who are making debuts and young lads play. I mean, at the time, I think it was Deeney, Forestieri and Vidra, the front three, and it was just an animal of a team of Watford. But we obviously had our main focus, which was the FA Cup semi-final, and we just got sent out like that as well. So I'd imagine the lads who played in the Fulham game, some of them probably wouldn't have taken it overly too hard. Some of them would have taken it really, really difficult because nobody wants to get beat 7 anywhere in any league at all. But if it's your first game, you sort of go, I don't think you can get too much worse than that.
I guess that is one way of looking at it. You just think, well, I mean, I don't think I'm going to get an 8-0. So it's kind of like, it's going to be okay. The situation then progressed into February. And now we're really getting towards the end of Panovic's reign at Reading Football Club. We have a 0-0 at Peterborough. You know, this is kind of the climax. There was issues with the coach leaving, fans protesting in the ground. We obviously had the protesting in January as well before the match. We had fans going onto the pitch during January as well. The situation at the club's getting really out of control here because the news off the pitch and the lack of kind of direction that we have was having more impact than on the pitch, Simon. As a player, does that affect you, or is that kind of, we just let that noise continue, we just continue on the pitch?
I think majority of players would have understood that the manager's tenure was, you know, coming to an end. He was one result away from leaving the club, or possibly had left the club before that game. So there was always I think when you're a senior player and you've been in football a long time, you know when the manager's not possibly going to be at your football club, unless he's brutally honest and he comes in the dressing room and says, listen, lads, and I've seen it. Listen, I'm not going to be here now. This is my last game. I just want you to go out and enjoy your football. Go and showcase everybody, because it was live on Sky as well. So go and show everybody that you're a good team, you're a good player. Go and showcase why we can get out of the situation we're in. Obviously, it was a 0-0 and it was actually a bad day. I think it was horrible conditions and everything else. And but with everything that was going on behind the scenes and I remember seeing the coach pull away and see all the supporters being surrounding the bus. And I think, who was the player? Was it Andy?
Andy Yeah,
he was talking to fans and stuff. So sometimes you need that. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say that he's a senior player, but he's obviously got a decent voice in him that he's able to front up. And I respect that because I think, and I think fans will respect that as well, because the last thing you want as a fan is to see people get on the bus and look like they don't care. Whereas if you've got somebody who can stand up and take the brunt of criticism, which ultimately was always going to come their way as players. I don't think it was necessarily at the players. I think it was a lot to do with behind the scenes and the manager and stuff like that, as well as the players, but not fully straight at the players. So, but it was nice to see somebody stand up and take the brunt of it for everybody else as well, which is credit to him.
Yeah, totally. And obviously, who's gone on to be voted our player of the season as well, which people can say John Swift, people can say Andy Idham. It's what's happened, hasn't it? People voted for his situation. Then we have a very, very typical for this season. We managed to win 3-2 at Preston. And then only maybe 20 minutes after the full-time whistle's gone, Paul Ince is announced, Matt. Your initial reaction on the timing and everything on that, because I remember Joan Karachan, who was on Radio Berkshire at that time and then coming on our podcast the next day, just could not work it out at all. He was totally bamboozled by the whole situation. I think that's how most people probably felt about it.
Well, yeah, like I think as fans, like, because we'd all heard the rumours that had preceded the game in the previous weeks as well, that Paunovic had tried to resign and the owners had said, no, you're staying here, you know, and I think
we won't let you leave. You cannot leave ever.
Well, yeah, it was the most baffling situation. And that was what obviously drove so much frustration at Peterborough within the fans. Again, it spilled onto the players because they're almost just that they were the ones that were there. You know, they were the ones that, as bad as it sound, you know, fans were able to throw stick at, you know, but fans needed answers at that point because there were so many rumours going around. Pauno wants to resign, hasn't resigned. You know, there was stuff about what the owner was wanting to do, and like that he's just using it for a punching bag, essentially, you know, just to take the flack off him, you know, and fans were just so fed up with it. And obviously they'd accepted his resignation, you know, on the Friday. I think they said in their statement, you know, the Friday morning they accepted the resignation. Preston would be his last game. So I don't think people were baffled by the resignation of Paunovic, because I think people thought it's just like he needed to go for his own sanity, because as a manager, there is no one that really should have been subject to what Paunovic was subject to in the last, you know, 2-3 weeks of his tenure, because realistically the owner should have just cut it off at some point, either by accepting his resignation or by, as again bad as it sounds, by sacking him, you know, because it just got to such a toxic point. The weird bit came with the final line of, or the final two lines of the statement, where it announced Paul Ince and Michael Jilks as interim, or no, it was Michael Jilks and wasn't it father of Tom Ince, Paul Ince as interim coach. And it was the most baffling, because again, I'd read it, and I think in our group chat, I can't remember who it was, it might have even been Dave that said it, I think, like, and like was like Paul Ince, and I was like, where's it said that Paul Ince has taken over? It was like in the bottom. I was like, sorry. it was just the most weird end to a statement, and the way they phrased it, father of Tom Ince, Paul Ince is taking interim charge, and the fact that it was him and Jilksy, and again, you just never got the clarity there, and it was just more of this kind of blasé, blah 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 kind of statements that we'd seen from Reading over this season that had come out, and you were just thinking, what is going on? You know, just what's happening here? You know, you don't bring in someone out externally for an interim job. You know, he's going to be here till the end of the season, most players knew. But in the statement it said, oh, we'll start diligent search, which, you know, never really materialised, as we know. But yeah, it was just weird.
Search was very short, wasn't it, Matt? Let's be honest.
It was. Well, it was non-existent.
We
just looked,
we got one here. We found one straight away.
Within 20 minutes. And
just happens to be, allegedly, Keir Jarrett client. I don't know how these things happen, Simon, but it seems to happen quite a lot at Reading Football Club.
Yeah.
What was your kind of like reaction when you heard that Paul Ince was going to be the manager? Because I know I was thinking, where the hell did this come from? I had to Google the last time he'd managed. I mean, as a player, world-class player, there's no doubt on that.
Yeah, I think I was the same as Matt. When I read the statement, I was like trying to figure out when he last managed, and he was out of the job for 8.5 years. And then I, you know, started talking to a lot of people, and I was the same as you, Paul. I spoke with Jem because I knew he was on the I was on the co-commentary for Radio Berkshire, and I was just, and he messaged me after the game. He said, mate, Paul Ince has got the job. And I was like, you're winding me up. I said, I didn't even know Paul Ince was still a manager, let alone be like available for a job. He would have been so far down in betting odds, like would have been scary.
Would have been given odds. But
you'd have had to phone the bookie, and the bookie would have said, who do you want? And you'd have said Paul Ince, and he was like, well, you obviously know something that everyone else doesn't.
Yes, exactly.
So we'll give you 2-1. But like, do you know what I mean? It just wasn't going to be feasible. But I was quite vocal. I was very vocal on him being appointed. I didn't see why, how, or for what reason was he then the best candidate to be the next manager?
Technically, he's still not been named as manager, has he? I think he's still down as interim boss at the moment, because it was like that. That's the weird thing about it. He's still interim boss. Like that, there was no timescale put on it. You know, it's still him and Jilks. Because it was baffling.
I think this is the problem with the football club having somebody like Keir, who has a really big influence at the football club. This is a problem where you don't have somebody running the football club who has a lot of football experience of running a football club. You know, so the length of the statement, the wording in the statement, you know, even going back to sort of the Peterborough game, talking to the fans, like there's no direction. There was no somebody coming out and saying, we understand the frustrations of the fans. We understand, we're going to try and put it right, blah, 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 that sort of thing. And make sure that ultimately you're not kicking up too much of a fuss. And then all of a sudden, if it is getting rid of Pauno, which obviously inevitably they did, you don't 20 minutes later then all of a sudden say that one of our lads' dad's the new manager. Which is basically what they said. He said, oh, we phoned Tom, said, is your dad available? And he said, yeah. And just as he fancied a job, that just sort of, it made no sense to me. So I was a little bit irate with the fact that he got the job.
Yeah, because I remember Jem said on our podcast that was the day after that, he said that his first reaction would have been to look over at Tom Ince and go, so do you know about this, Tom?
Give us the lowdown. Like, what's happened? What conversations?
What's going on here? Yeah. Such a weird world of the football world. Sometimes you think you can't be surprised by anything, and then bang, you get hit by something. You think, I've no idea where that has come from. That was an insane moment. But Tom Ince, to his credit, I think is actually, we'd want him back next season, Matt. I wasn't like totally convinced at first. He didn't have some great games at all, and I said that, but he's been pretty good for the last couple of months.
It's been a strange one, hasn't it? Because I think, again, like at the start of his time here, obviously his dad came in about a week and a half after he actually signed on loan. And I guess he took probably quite a lot of fans' stick that was aimed, again, at the owner, Keir, you know, the appointment, everything around it. He bore a lot of the brunt, because, again, there was a lot of fans that were like, oh, sub your son off, you know, you're only playing because your dad's here. And to his credit, I can say this pretty much hand on heart, that I don't think I've seen a lone player that's actually put more into games that Tom Ince has done. You know, I remember at the Cardiff game that we lost, he was absolutely, he was furious after we scored, or after we conceded the second goal, you know, and ultimately lost that game. But the amount he ran, like he almost became an on-pitch leader in 6 months, you know. And yes, his end product was a bit questioned, you know. He wasn't the calmest finishing, you know, but effort levels and kind of commitment to the cause, you can only really take your hat off to him, because again, he's probably had a very weird but difficult time really in his 6 months at Reading, but you can only credit kind of what he's put in. And yeah, he'd probably be one of the first that I'd be looking to get back next season from this squad.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of them I'd want to get back, and some of them you're just going to move on, aren't you? It's the situation. I thought we scored a critical goal against Bournemouth away, gets us a point there. Then we have our goal of the season against Blackburn Rovers from Josh Lauren. He's another player we'd love to keep, Simon, for next season, but I'm not sure. I think he's going to have some better offers, possibly.
Possibly, but I think he's, again, this is where like my thoughts are about the summer coming up, is that the people like Josh who have played in a lower league. You know, I think he was at Shrewsbury. I think I played against him a couple of times. But he's the type of person that stepped up to the plate. He's someone who had something to prove, felt that he had a chance at being in a team where he would thrive. He was really hard working. Listen, his goal's incredible. You know, it really is. It's a great finish. I mean, I don't even know how you get that swerve, dip and power into the strike. So, but credit to him. And I think sometimes some Reading fans would be a little bit critical in terms of saying, well, why would you let him leave? But if he's got better football clubs and he's going to probably be challenging at the top end of the league, then would you blame him for leaving? I don't think many football fans would do, really.
No, definitely not. It's a situation. You've got to look after yourself above everything, haven't you? You have to be selfish in some ways, I suspect, because your career can change at any moment, couldn't it?
Yeah, it can. But I think ultimately, I mean, it would depend on where he goes, you know, if he goes, obviously. So let's say, for instance, I don't know, if Watford came in for him, like coming down from the Premier League, if Watford came in for him, is he going to be one of about five or six midfield players? Does he really look at the Watford squad and go, yeah, no, it'd be nice to be part of that squad. Probably going to challenge for the title. Going to probably be in the Premier League in a season in a bit. But am I going to play that often? If he believes in himself and he wants to go and play and try and get himself into the squad, yeah, absolutely take the chance. But if he looks at it and says, I don't know if I'm going to play that often. They're a big club. They're going to bring in loads of players. I'm just going to be one of, you know, a certain amount of players coming through the door. Then he's probably better off staying maybe for another 6 months and then leaving in January, if that was maybe an offer that he had to decide on.
Yeah, totally. There's another player that will definitely be here next season. That is Tom McIntyre. Now, when we fast forward into April, we have Tom McIntyre time. Well, basically, he just scores two critical goals for us. He comes into his own. He's a man who's from Reading, like yourself, Simon. He loves the ding. He absolutely loves them. And most importantly, though, he's becoming a proper championship player. It's not just because he's a Reading fan. It's because he should be on the pitch.
Yeah, and I think the one thing about him, though, is that you can see that he's got that drive to be the person that people look to. He has that. It's very difficult to, when you're from a certain place in the country or somewhere and you've played at a better level or whatever it is, to try and have that drive. And he has that because he's been a lad who's come through the system. He's seen it. He's seen the people that have done it before him, and he's probably looked at it. I remember seeing a photo of him being at the playoff final, I think it was, when he had his shirt off.
I think that was 2005. Yeah, 2005 at Leicester away.
There you go. So yeah, so I've been seeing him. Yeah. Seen that. But that's the sort of thing that would have inspired him. Seeing the likes of Ingemar Marson and Sonko and people like that who took it on themselves to be that type of person. And he's grown in stature, but I mean, nobody expected him to pop up with goals, but the fact that he can pop up with a few goals is always a good thing to have in your armoury.
Yeah, totally. Two quality finishes, Matt, as well, weren't they? First one, Sheffield United, obviously monumental goal. And then the absolutely insane game against Swansea City when you're 4-1 down and then you get a draw. I mean, how amazing that. And Swansea fans singing about Wembley at 4-2 and they don't win. I mean, that's a sweet moment as well, isn't it?
Oh my God! That like, I very few goals has given me more pleasure than that Swansea game. I mean, as a fan, I mean, I think my poor ticker. I mean, it's had its trials and tribulations in my life, but that pushed it quite close to the end. That Swansea game, because right, like I've just never felt a feeling like that. I have because of obviously previous, but not in a long time. Like, you know, just watching that and the way the team came back, like you say, the Swansea fans gloating over at 4-1. Oh, you know, we've seen this scoreline before, singing about Wembley, and you just think, fuck off. Like, get out of here. Seriously. Like, just, I was done at that point. I was just like, just go away. Just, yeah. But then to come back from that, and yeah, it wasn't a win. It didn't win us a title. It didn't really even keep us up, you know, but it was just after the game on Good Friday, and you kind of saw, you did see something under the Ince regime of just a bit more tenacity, a bit more effort, a bit more commitment, you know, getting a bit more out of the players. And just seeing a bit more connection. And maybe that connection just came from those goals from Tom McIntyre, being local boy, born and bred and what have you. But you started to see something, and you had moments between the fans and the players. You know, after the Swansea game, I mean, the Medeski was rocking for, you know, 5 minutes after the game, you know. And you had Tom McIntyre at the front leading chants and stuff, you know. And it was, like I say, it didn't, realistically, when you look at it, it didn't win us anything, but it was just a moment where you just looked at and you thought, there's still hope in this team. There's certain parts in this team where if you can keep the core together, if you can keep the likes of, you know, Tom McIntyre, Holmes and that are born and bred, you know, die for the shirt. If you can keep those players in and around, there's a structure there, that there's something there that you can look at and try and mold going forwards.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I'm going to gloss over the last game of the season because nobody wants to talk about the Nylander clangier again. And least of all him. I suspect that's probably going to be there all summer for him now, just thinking about that one moment.
It was the weird thing, though, because it just went a bit flat after that Swansea game, didn't it? Because like that Swansea game, actually, well, I guess we relegated Derby on that day as well. But then the way we stayed up, it was just so anticlimactic. I said it at the time, it kind of reminded me of the season, and it was for Clark's first season actually, when we stayed up at Rotherham, you know, when it was 2-1, and I think it was a penultimate game, and it was like, oh well, we've lost but we've stayed up, and it was all a bit like it's just, yeah, but yeah,
quite a lot of the Steve Clark reign there though, Simon. It's a kind of a tricky era, once would be fair to say, do you think?
Yeah, a little bit. Listen, I'm not his biggest fan, so you're probably asking the wrong person. But listen, I think ultimately he's a good coach, but he's not the type of person for me. So the less said, the better, I think.
Yeah, these things happen, doesn't it? Sometimes it just doesn't quite mix together, does it? So we have stayed up. And that is all that ultimately matters. We look forward. We hope for better situations next season. And we hope for like miracles in the transfer market. Whether that's going to happen or not, we don't know. We just have to wait and see. So thanks a lot for joining us, Matt and Simon. Really appreciate your time. And just thanks for listening. If you've suffered all these podcasts throughout the season, wow, you deserve a medal. You really do. I don't know why you've done it, but I love you all. Cheers. Thank you. Bye.